And I was like, okay, like, this is a proper community. She Bites Back is a punchy name. I also came up with that by accident. Oh my gosh, I actually love this topic. You can't just pick a random person off the street and say, use this platform and vibe code your way to an app. They won't actually be able to do it. You build up your network and you help other people to land exciting new opportunities. Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. To me, I saw it as everyone is doing this.
Yeah.
And it's nothing special. So it's really interesting that you say that. And this will be interesting to hear your opinion on this. It's a question I can't answer. Hi, my name's Amber and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. I'm Becky Sims, your host, and I have the most amazing co-host with me today, Alice. Welcome back on the show.
Thank you. Tell us
who you are.
I'm Alice. I'm a third year business psychology student.
Fantastic. Well, it's lovely having you back here.
Thank you.
And then we have a wonderful guest with us today, Amber. Amber, please tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you for having me. My name's Amber. I'm the founder of She Bites Back, the ambitious community
for women in tech.
Yeah, because she does. She Bites Back.
It's such a cool name
thank
though,
you,
isn't it?
Thank
like
you.
So incredible. So we stopped you in your flow then with the just loving the name. But and so over to you for your first question, I guess, Alice.
Okay. Well, do you want to explain a bit about what She Bites Back is? So then I can ask my question, otherwise it might not make contextual sense.
Okay. So She Bites Back is essentially the empowering community for ambitious women in tech, so we can actually thrive while we're in tech. There's loads of resources about how to get in, but not enough resources on how to retain the women that are in tech. So that's why it exists.
Awesome. So one of my questions was, what do you find most rewarding about bringing women together?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. The energy, 100%, and the shared experiences. So when you're like one of the only women in technology in your team, sometimes in your office, it can be quite isolating. And so having a room full of amazing women in that field, knowing their stuff, empowering one another and sharing our lived experiences is actually, it helps you to feel so seen and supported, and like they just get it. And that's the best thing about it, to be honest.
I definitely think as women, like in all industries, it's really nice to stick together and just relate with each other.
Yeah, exactly. Because you don't see, like, even when you think of people in tech, like, who do you really think of? Is it Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos? Like, you don't really think, maybe Sheryl Sandberg, maybe. That might actually be a good one. But for most people, a woman doesn't even come to mind. So it's about, okay, how can we uplift this community to not only thrive in tech, but to also have that visibility so that when young people are looking for careers in STEM, they see people like them already in the industry. And that's very powerful as well.
I love it. How did this happen though? So, because this wasn't where you started. As a software engineer?
Yeah, well, even before that, I actually studied economics and accounting at university.
Okay.
And so I went to University of Leicester, studied economics and accounting. I did a finance internship in Madrid and I realized, look, mate, finance ain't for me. Right?
Was Madrid good though?
Madrid was a vibe. Like, yeah. It was actually probably one of the best years of my life, easily. Madrid was amazing, but I realized that, okay, I actually don't want to pursue a career in finance. And I was very fortunate enough to have a mentor who told me the real tea, which is that once you landed that role that I wanted in finance, you had to take a series of exams. And because I wanted to work at the big four, so that's the EY, the PwC, the KPMG, if you didn't pass that exam, you'd actually be fired.
Wow. Okay.
And
tough.
I said, look, mate, I'm not strong enough for this.
Yeah.
So she had to make a detour. And so I actually went traveling around Spain and I met all these like digital nomads who were coders. And they were like, yeah, we code and travel. And I said, girl, let me sign up to do that. Like, that sounds like something I'd like to do. And this was before the pandemic. So remote working wasn't as normalized as it is now. Obviously, because of the pandemic, it's much easier or like much more just normalized to essentially work remotely. But in those days, it was like a luxury. So I said, okay, I'm heading towards luxury. Let's learn how to code. So when I came back to London, I was like, okay, I'm going to sign up to a free coding course. I have no idea how I found Code First Girls, but that was my first point, finding Code First Girls.
Love that. And I've come across that community many a time.
Yeah,
it's
amazing. They're literally amazing. And the great thing was, it was in person. There were you had the community support just to hold you accountable because we're all in the same boat, right? We all don't come from technical backgrounds. It was interesting though, because when I was doing the first course and we're building this website, I was like, why are you guys here? Because I'm trying to get a job. Like, what? And they were like, I felt like the people in my course actually weren't trying to break into tech, which is really interesting. It was almost like they were just trying to develop a new skill. So that was always very interesting. But long story short, I decided to transition during the pandemic, teaching other women through Code First Girls how to code whilst also applying for my first role on top of that as well.
Amazing. So while you were learning, you were teaching, which is such a great way to actually continue to learn, isn't it? Actually, when you teach people things, it really means that it's stuck with you.
Yeah, especially during the pandemic, right? Because jobs were, it was such a tough job market. So when I was going for interviews, they were saying, we don't understand. Why do you want to be a coder? Minus you wanting to travel around the world and whatnot. Like, what is the reason? So I didn't really get it. And so I felt like that helped me to build credibility once I was like applying for roles and saying in my interviews. But also, like, it's a great way to stand out as an applicant. So they know, okay, this person may not have studied computer science, but look at all the strides they're doing to actually get into the industry. So it helped me to stand out a lot as well.
Definitely. And then, so you get your first software engineering job at this point, do you?
Well, no. Oh my gosh. I wish I had the sexy story of I learned how to code in 3 months and I got a 6-figure salary. That unfortunately was not the case. I've got a very unsexy story.
But does that even exist? I feel like that story is.
They do.
People put them out there.
Oh my gosh, I was addicted to those stories. So I would actually just go, there was a website called No CS Degree. Which is basically sexy stories or like all around. So it's like people who learn how to code in 3 months, land their roles. A lot of them did boot camps. And like if you even go on YouTube now, if you type in how to get my first software engineer role in 3 months, there's loads of videos. Okay. I was trying to follow them and I was not successful. And it was funny because I actually came across a video that said it's actually easier to land a technical role that may not be a software engineer and pivot. So that's what I actually did first. I actually landed my first role as a data analyst in September 2020. And I was like, okay, this is actually really good. I was learning Python. I was really enjoying it. But I knew that I actually wanted to be loved front-end development. And so I actually was learning how to code again, even though I was doing it in my day job, but also through the Sky Get Into Tech scheme.
Nice.
Which was a free, I think it was like, I have no idea how long it was now, but let's just say 6 weeks. Free 6-week program. And during that time, 2 weeks in, I actually had my first role at Amex as a software engineer.
Amazing.
Wow.
There are so many programs though, aren't there, out there?
Yeah.
You don't always know about them or how to find them or how to get onto them. But like a lot of the big companies like Sky will do these programs that are just fantastic for helping you and more practical maybe than actually if you'd gone and done it as a university degree, because they're much more hands-on and closer to what a business needs delivering.
Yeah, exactly that. And it was great because I was following the journeys of people who were just landing their first role. So looking at them versus like, So a lot of people come to me and say, how do I land my first role in tech? And I say to them, you should actually ask someone who's just done it because they have all the latest and greatest resources. I can say what worked 5 years ago, but what got me there won't get you in the same places nowadays. And so what I did was when it came to like speaking with senior engineers, they would actually help me with the technical problems that I was dealing with. So whether that was like the coding exams or like explaining, running through a technical solution versus asking them, how do I get in? Do you see the difference?
Yeah. Exactly. And so you get your first job at Amex at this point, and not first job ever, but first job as a software engineer. That's a cool place to work. What was that like?
Oh, it was really actually tough because it was during lockdown. And so it was actually tough, like the whole onboarding being remote. But I loved the company. It was a great company, a great product, great team. But I did struggle with like the whole doing this during lockdown.
Yeah.
And like, I think upon reflection, you can't really appreciate just how tough it is to onboard as a new joiner virtually. And when you go into a team, it's like everyone already knows each other in person. They have these relationships and you're kind of just like an online entity in a weird way.
Yeah.
And that was really challenging, actually. I didn't realize how challenging that would be.
And also, I guess, being new to the type of job as well as a software engineer, because you've got so many questions. And I know one thing that we talk about, we still have some of our team work remote with us, but I always say like trying to make it easy for them to ask questions, because you feel like a bit of a pain having to be like send a Slack or send an email, when actually in the office you'd have just gone, oh Alice, could I ask you a question, which doesn't feel as invasive, or you don't have to wait, it's just there. But trying to kind of create that environment so that you can get the support and help you need, because brand new to the company and brand new to the job, you need some support around you.
Exactly. And that was the hardest part because, okay, I'm new, I don't come from a technical background, and now I'm feeling self-conscious but asking questions. Yeah. I was actually very fortunate that the director in my team was just, he led by example, which you can't not respect. So he was always saying, you need to ask questions, but you knew every time there was a meeting, he would ask a question at the end, you know? And so it was good to see him actually leading by example, because it was like, oh, okay, if he's setting the standard, now this is a standard. And also getting great feedback that, oh, Amber, we love that you're asking questions because it means that you're engaged. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I had to make a mental shift that asking questions at work didn't mean that I was incompetent. It actually showed that I was willing to learn and I was engaged. And I'm not a burden. I think that was the thing that I was telling myself before, like, oh my gosh, they're going to know that you're not smart enough and that you don't come from a technical background if you're asking all these questions. But that actually wasn't the case.
Yeah. And I guess some of our audience won't be aware. Like, if you work in the sector, you become aware quite quickly that actually women in tech, and especially as software engineers, is a minority.
Yeah.
Was that the case in Amex? What was that like? Were you one of many or just literally just you? Or
it's a question I can't answer, because Amex is a huge company.
Yeah. Like, it's but in your team, I guess, did you feel team. Like, were you the only female? Or
Amex, interestingly, not actually.
That's good. That's
actually
nice.
A good representation of women in tech. And it was actually nice to see that there were super coders as women as well. So like, so one of them that I worked with, I think she was coding since like the age of 12 or something like that. Just an absolute super coder. So that was actually really nice for me to see and be reinforced that, okay, there are women in the industry who really do know their stuff and they are paving the way for developers like me who are new to the industry to essentially become more like them. But that was amazing. And I think the culture of sharing and learning was so empowering for me, because it built that psychological safety for me to learn in a safe environment, but to also to ask those questions when I didn't understand something. Because there's always going to be a case where, you know, you're going through a hard technical subject or like a project and you're just confused on, oh my goodness, I actually have no idea what we're doing here. So to be able to be open, be like, okay, can you explain this again? Which is before the age of ChatGPT, because now I would just be like, explain this to me like a 9-year-old. that is a ChatGPT hack, by the way.
It is brilliant, isn't it?
It's so good at just like simplifying extremely complex and technical subjects.
Yeah. Do you think people will be asking less questions of each other because of ChatGPT?
I think they already are.
Yeah.
They already are, because there's no need to ask certain questions anymore.
Yeah.
And especially if you are plagued with the idea of, oh my goodness, I want to come across as I know everything, I don't want to ask that many questions, you are going to ask ChatGPT. There is a difference between like the way you do things internally versus like technical problems.
Yep.
So sometimes it's a case of you can't ask ChatGPT this particular question because it's a case of how things are done internally.
Yep.
So you do have to pick and choose when you use it, but it's great in terms of being proactive. So in terms of, okay, I may not understand this concept, but I can actually research this myself. And if I want to talk through it with someone else that has more experience with it, then I can do that.
Yeah.
But I feel like, yeah, ChatGPT, everyone's using it, let's be honest.
Even for like a bit of reassurance, like even if you do understand something, but you just want to make sure you understand it correctly, it's just always there.
It's always there. And I'm still talking about, can you give me a pep talk? I'm feeling quite rubbish.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you got this.
Isn't it? It is so good with that. I feel like it actually does do the role of empathy quite well sometimes.
Yeah.
Like in some of the things that I've done with it, where like I've asked it, I've put this talk in or I've put an article in and said, could you give me some feedback on this? And they're like, it's brilliant, well done. And you're like, can you also make sure, like, imagine you're in a grumpy mood, what would you say? Like, you do sometimes have to tone it down because you're like, oh no, I do want to make sure you give me the real answer and not just trying to make me feel good. But sometimes you do just want to feel good.
Exactly. And let's be honest, like ChatGPT hallucinates.
Yes.
And sometimes the hallucinations are so bad. I think it's even cut out in the news that there was a company that did some kind of report and they clearly used ChatGPT and there was hallucinations in it and they found that out and they had to withdraw the report. It was like a whole drama.
Yeah.
So you do have to read through what ChatGPT says.
Yeah.
It does have a tendency to do it. Like, I feel like we look at ChatGPT and then any other AI tools as like, you are the holy of all things, like you are the expert, but actually it's not. And sometimes it's just vibing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does it with such confidence that actually, unless you do check it properly, you believe it. You're like, yeah, great, thanks. send that off, that article. That's perfect. And actually, it's just made up half of it. But it's done it with confidence.
And that's why I think it's a tool versus a replacement, because at the end of the day, we do still need to read through it. We need to check the accuracy. Like, we do still have some domain knowledge that ChatGPT just can't get, and context around certain things. So I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist. I'm an AI optimist.
What do you think about some of the AI tools to help with coding, though, actually? Because I know that's it's interesting thinking about, because I suppose I've had conversations with some people from a business perspective of actually suddenly we're putting the tool of being able to code in the hands of everybody. If you've got access to an AI agent that can help you with it, that suddenly I haven't been taught how to code. I don't know security wise what I should consider, what questions I should ask, but I could use something that builds something that I put it live. But actually, I wasn't really trained to check it was correct, etc. Like, I don't know, it worries me a little bit how it's putting it in every, like, it's great, it's democratizing it in some ways, but actually there's certain things that when you learn and you go through whatever types of courses or whether it's a degree, you learn how to do things, or a company teaches you, we have these protocols to make sure it's safe, it's secure, it's not going to handle the data badly, etc. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, I actually love this topic. I didn't know we were going here.
No, so I didn't know we were going here either. We just got here.
So I'm excited. No, because I was literally speaking on a panel about vibe coding, and that's what it is. But vibe coding is actually a skill. So there's two ways you can look at it. It's from like a technical perspective and a non-technical perspective. When you talk about vibe coding, which no one actually agrees on the definition of that, let's be honest. So some people think that it's when you're using AI tools to build technical solutions. Some people think it's similar to what you're saying, when you're using AI tools, but you don't understand like the technical complexity beneath that. So you're kind of just vibing and saying, okay, ChatGPT, make me this app, or you're going on platforms like Lovable and these other things and saying, can you make me this thing? But when it does it and there's like a bug or something breaks, you have no idea what's causing it. You have no idea how to read the error messages. So you're relying on that same application to tell you what's wrong with it, which is a whole complication in itself. But when you talk to technical people, I feel like we are warming up to the idea of vibe coding now, especially because there's so many different definitions to describe it. But it's cool to know that it's a literal skill. So if you type in like vibe coding tutorial, there's so many prompts, so many things that you could learn now to actually effectively build an app. Yeah, you're right. Like, it's not going to have the security that you need, or like you probably would need to level up in terms of understanding, okay, what do I need to understand to actually deploy this app and not run any security risks? But it's absolutely amazing. I actually love it.
It is incredible, isn't it?
I would love to make vibe coding my entire personality at this point. Like, because it's just so... But the thing is, like, you can't just pick a random person off the street and say, use this platform and vibe code your way to an app. They won't actually be able to do it.
No.
Like, I think that one misconception about using AI-assisted tools is that, like, it's intuitive. Like, you almost speak to it as you would a person. But, like, loads of people's prompts are so long. And like, I think, like, that's why we're getting to new... but essentially we're basically learning how to prompt effectively. So we're getting the best out of the AI models, and this is what companies are still agreeing on, right, in terms of, okay, what tools are they allowed to use, are they allowed to copy and paste code into these tools or not. Like, there's so many different rules surrounding it, because no company is in agreement about how that really works.
Yeah. I mean, at a low level, we did a bit of coding, like in my degree. I found it so, so hard. But I'd like make all my coding notes, but then I'd put my notes into ChatGPT and be like, select out of my notes what I'd need to use for this. So then I still did like my notes, but then it would help me know which was the right bit to use when, which for somebody who had like not any idea what was going on, basically, it was really helpful.
Yeah, exactly. And like before that, you probably would have had to find someone who's studying computer science.
Yeah, or I'd have to like troll through like 24 pages of notes to try and find it. And it's,
Or you'd have to hire a tutor or like to walk through that. But now ChatGPT can essentially be, not just ChatGPT, I know I'm saying that a lot, the AI tool, right, to actually pair program with you and explain why you're going. And this is why I'm not against using AI tools, because if you're using it as a learning environment versus just give me the answer, I'll copy and paste it, and you're not actually using your brain at all, then that's really powerful. But you also have to learn how to learn, which is so hard. Like, I didn't realize how much I couldn't. So when I was learning how to code, I was like, how do I learn this? And what is my way of learning? Is it watching videos? Is it writing things down? But that was actually really, really cool to understand.
Yeah, no, I love that. So you're at this job at Amex. What's that like? How long do you stay there for? And because I'm excited to see how we ended up with She Bites Back. So
okay,
yeah,
okay. Let's skip a few iterations. Okay, this was actually, so I recently was at Skyscanner. So mm-hmm. I was there for 2 years and 2 months. And that was amazing because you're working at a mid-sized company. The culture was amazing. The collaboration was great. And I feel like at this point I'm building up my newsletter, and I think it was called like imposter methods, because I was meeting so many other women in tech who were really having bad imposter syndrome. So I was doing a lot of research into like what imposter syndrome is, where it came from, different types, how we can combat it, all these things. I now have a different opinion on imposter syndrome than I did then. But I think, yeah, that's a whole of a conversation.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, so you're busy working a busy job, but you then decide to start this newsletter, because I guess most people wouldn't do that.
Okay, this is the context, right? Remember, I'm learning how to code during the pandemic. Everyone and their nan was on Twitter. I was on Twitter. So my norm was seeing people working full-time and creating content. So like to me that was normal. Mm. So during the pandemic, maybe because people had more time.
Yeah.
So that's why it was a norm. I remember that's my first taste of tech. I'm like, okay, this is what software engineers do. They make their entire personality around having that job. So that's actually what I did. And so to me it was normal. So when I'd meet people outside of the industry saying, I can't believe you have a website, I can't believe you're doing this, I'm like, oh yeah, that isn't actually normal.
Yeah. Because like, it's amazing.
And I feel like that's what I needed sometimes, just to be out of the industry to know that, oh, okay, this is going above and beyond. And it wasn't just a norm, but to me, I saw it as everyone is doing this.
Yeah.
And it's nothing special. So it's really interesting that you say that and that we bring that up today. But yes, essentially it was a norm. Like it was like, okay, like this is what people do. And I think I wanted to put out the resources that I needed as well. And it was actually really, really fulfilling to do that level of research and to challenge myself. I did a lot more public speaking. Like I got into public speaking during the pandemic as well, because I would speak with other communities just about anything really, about what I was doing to learn how to code, and what I was doing to land a new role in tech, what I was doing in terms of teaching other people how to code. I was even creating some coding resources, which I came across the other day, and I was like, how was she? You can tell I had a lot of time during the pandemic. I wish I was making banana bread, but I wasn't. I was really out here making resources and things happen.
I love that though, but that showed that also you'd found something that you really loved. So like after your year in Madrid where you were like, actually this is not for me and I don't want to go into this from a finance and accounting perspective, to then have found something that you love, that you've got free extra time where you could have been making banana bread as everyone else was, you suddenly start going, actually I could start doing more with this and helping other people with this. So again, that's very entrepreneurial and very it shows you are a community person.
But I do think that a lot of people, especially when they transition into tech, they do that. I've noticed that a lot. Like a lot of people, when they transition to tech, I think we benefited so much from other resources that it's almost a way of like giving back and creating your own resource in terms of, okay, this is what I did, these are all the tools that I learned, and these are things I'd recommend. Which is really interesting. And I used to go to a lot of women in tech events. One of them was my favorite, was called Trying Girls. And it was actually for designers, but the majority were designers. But I was like, okay, I'm a software engineer at this event. It was amazing. And when they stopped their events, I was like looking around saying, who's going to do the events? Because I'm not going to do it. I barely celebrate my birthday. Like I literally do not, you won't see Amber saying big party for her birthday. So I was like, it's not going to be me. I can't do events. And then eventually I was just doing it. Online events, because I was doing loads of speaking anyway. So I was doing online events, connects, and then people in the comments were like, I love this community. And I was thinking, and this actually was just a webinar about imposter syndrome
or
confidence. And I was like, oh, okay, so maybe like people are seeing this as a community, which was not, it had no name. It was just me doing webinars. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should actually launch a community. I really missed the events, because they were just such a vibe. They were so unique. The energy was amazing. It wasn't what you'd think a Women in Tech event would ever be as well. So it was always just like really punchy, like topics. Like I remember like navigating the crap of like corporate politics, or I don't know. It was just really fun events, and that just had such a good feel for them. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to do my own event. And I kind of reach out to this venue because I see online that they said, oh, we'll give people free space when they reach out. I reach out to them and then they reach out to me and I was thinking, oh no, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm so scared. I was like, what am I? I was like, who do I think I am? So I kind of ghosted them. And then they reached out to me again. And I thought, okay, do you know what? Let me put on my big girl pants and say, okay, we're going to make this happen. And that was in May 2024. That was the first event, and it's like we've just been on a roll since. So we've worked with Depop recently, Figma, and very exciting new people coming for 2026. So keep your eyes peeled.
Wow. It's amazing that you built like a community by accident almost.
Yeah. It was literally by accident.
That is like you need to not underestimate yourself, what you've created, and like people would obviously only listen if what you were saying was really helpful and useful.
Yeah, and I think it's actually really powerful as well, because you build up your network and you help other people to land exciting new opportunities. So someone said to me, do you know anyone that works at this company? I probably do.
Yeah.
And it's about like making that connection of, okay, like helping them land exciting new opportunities as well, which is really fulfilling.
Yeah, I love that.
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
And so you were still at Skyscanner when you hosted that first event, were you?
Yeah, I was still at Skyscanner. And Skyscanner was so nice. They were just like, yeah, we love what you do. Keep doing it.
That's
like,
so nice.
Delicious.
Love it. So how long did that last? Because you eventually leave Skyscanner to do this permanently.
Yeah.
And what's it called at this point? Is it called She Bites Back
it's
by this
She
point?
It's called She Bites Back. Like, I announced the name in January 2024. So I was like, okay, we changed the newsletter to that name first. And I was like, okay, like this is a proper community. She Bites Back is a punchy name. I also came up with that by accident because the newsletter went from Imposter Methods to Own Your Wins, which I did love, but upon reflection, it wasn't a great name. But I basically, you know, when you go on Instagram, you can just like take a domain, like a username.
Yeah.
It's called Own Your Wins. And someone messaged you on there saying, I just bought the domain. Can you give me this Instagram name? And I was like, why did I not buy the domain for Own Your Wins? And so I was like, I need a new name. And I think I was in like St. Lucia at the time. And I was like to my mum, come on, mum, we need to go for all the names. We need something punchy and whatnot. But I basically came up with it by accident at like 2 a.m. and I shake my boyfriend awake saying, oh my gosh, I come up with a name. It's called She Bites Back. And I'm like, do you love it? Do you love it? And he's like, yeah, it's good.
Can I get back to sleep now?
I'm like, not quite the reaction I was looking for. Yeah. But
then you knew it was the one.
No, I didn't. I was like, it's too bold.
No.
I was like, oh my God, like She Bites Back is crazy.
I think that's why it's so good though, because it's like, what?
Yeah,
she bites
back.
So
I was like, oh, I think it might be too bold. Like,
but it's nice edginess to the community as well. But then also, like, having met you, you're just a warm hug as well. Like, you've got such a beautiful personality that just shines through immediately. So you might be like, well, have you heard about She Bites Back? And you're like, oh, I'm a bit scared. And then you meet Amber and you're like, oh my word, this is place for me.
I think that technically as well, because it's B-Y-T-E-S, it's a bit nerdy. So it's not like I'm B-I-T.
Yeah, actually
like we're not literally biting you, you know? So
no, it's clever. I like
it's
it.
It's really cool.
Thank you.
It's memorable. And yeah. So January, the name comes out, you've rebranded the newsletter. First event was May, did you say?
Yeah, May.
And so how long are you still at Skyscanner for? Well, this is then
literally 2 years.
2 years. So okay, so it was going a long time.
It's going a long time. Like it was just so intense doing both, because I would take days off to do the events and I would take days off to do speaking. And it got to a point where for starters, I am so surprised I didn't burn out. I don't know how I managed my energy, but I did it very well. I think every time I was like flirting with burnout, I had a holiday booked.
Yeah.
Like there was a time where I was like, I'm actually going to be burnt out very soon. And then I was off for like 3 or 4 weeks.
I just needed it.
1 week was like a public speaking retreat. Then the next week was Italy. And then the next week was Bali. I was like,
oh my gosh,
you actually can't make this up.
Yeah.
It was great.
Sounds like you earned it as well.
I did earn it. And the thing is, my issue again, and it's actually quite nice to have this conversation in terms of, because I saw it as such a norm, I always found it hard to let it go, or like to give myself the credit of, okay, this is actually not normal. Like, how is she doing? And when people would ask me, how are you doing this? How are you not getting burnout? How do you work full time? I just wouldn't understand that question. Now I get it. Yeah. Now I say, now that I'm doing She Works Back full time, I have no idea how I did both.
But it's one of those things, isn't it? When you've kind of got the fire and the energy behind something, you can make space to do incredible things, but actually for a short amount of time to then go, do you know what, now I'm ready to be able to take that massive leap, and suddenly it will fill your time more because you're doing more than you would have been doing before, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, that's also another point. Like, we're doing way more than we did before. And it's also like giving me a lot more space to understand what the community actually needs. So I don't know, well, I think this will probably go out maybe after I do this event, but essentially I'm collaborating with another woman who's incredible, and it's all about navigating a late diagnosis of ADHD and autism. Mm-hmm. And I could not believe like how much my community responded so well to that, like saying, this is exactly what we need. Thanks so much for having this kind of conversation. And I just don't think that I necessarily had the capacity to really look at what the community really needs in the same way that I do now. So I can really take a step back and be like, oh, okay, like to really actually thrive in your career, what resources do you need? Because I've definitely focused a lot on confidence and public speaking. That's mm-hmm. definitely something that you need, especially when we're in an age of AI, right, where technical skills can basically be like, you know,
ChatGPT. Competition.
There's competition now, you know? So like ChatGPT can sort that out. But when it comes to presence and communication, that's definitely what I've been focusing on more recently. But I definitely want to join the two things together.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So what do you find are the popular topics, or is there demand for different things? And yeah, obviously, because the ADHD topic has been a really big one, I think, across the whole industry. There's a lot of people being diagnosed now in their 30s, 40s and above probably. But yeah, are there any other themes that seem to come out?
Definitely public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely confidence. Now, like, obviously, because this event a lot about neurodiversity, but a lot of things is how to navigate corporate politics, which I promise you, I'm not the best person to go to about this. Like, so I always get speakers to come in just to give their perspective and opinions. Like, an event I'm really excited to be doing in January, which I need to find a less scary name, because I want to call it Play to Win in Your Career, but it can be a bit intimidating. But one thing we do need to talk about is how to navigate corporate politics, because it's so challenging, and especially because there's so many factors to it. It's like, especially if you're a minority in your team, or like you work remotely, or you don't work, like there are so many factors that can go into how to navigate this new area.
And also subject. I guess like women tend to be, if they've had children, are the main caregivers, so like actually trying to navigate that around a full-time job and a career. And it shouldn't be that you then can't have a career because you've got children to look after as well. In the flexible world we live in, there has to be ways around that, but I think there's lots of challenges that can come up in a woman's life at different stages. Menopause, things like that. There's so many topics. Do you have any men that come to the community at all, or get involved, or come and speak to the community, or is it fully women?
It's fully women.
Yeah. Good. No, that's good.
That's nice.
But sometimes I have seen like women's communities where you see men slip in and you're like, okay, that's interesting. But I also do like it when men, like we're endometriosis champions at work. We're part of their, they've got like a corporate scheme, and we've got some men in that group, because I think it's really important that men understand some of the challenges of what women go through. So it's almost like, actually, it might be nice to do an annual event where men can come in, or I don't know. But I just think men do need to understand some of the challenges to be able to help women rise up in the way that we need to.
Yeah, and I feel like a great way to do that is through interactive workshops as well. So there are some companies that do like period pain stimulators and menopause stimulators as well, and it gets men involved in the conversation and in terms of building up that empathy and awareness to know that this is what some women actually deal with as well. That can be so powerful, really powerful. Like, I don't remember, I think it's called Over the Bloody Moon. They do those kind of interactive workshops. So we did that with Skyscanner, and that was amazing. It was really, really good.
Yeah. I've always wanted to get my husband actually to try one of those simulators out.
Yeah.
It's, you have to do it on a day he's annoyed you.
Yeah. Here, have a go with this.
This is a really fun toy I've got to play with.
But it is tough though, isn't it? It's hard being a woman and in an industry where we're not the norm.
Yeah. I also think it's really nice to talk about those things. Like, I feel like for so long, like women have been going through them, but it's not been spoken spoken about. So the fact that like you're speaking about it and educating people about it, it's so nice because it means, like you said, the men can support us, everyone can support each other because they all have like an overall understanding rather than women just fighting it in silence.
I know. And I think that like it makes such a difference being able to have that kind of conversation and be like, this is what I'm going through. Am I the only one? Because sometimes you just blame yourself. You think, oh, okay, maybe my colleagues just hate me, or
yeah,
like, maybe I'm just not that smart, or maybe I just don't fit in here. But like when you see other people and you have that conversation, you're like, oh, okay, I'm actually not broken.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can like internalize it and feel like we're the broken ones that we need to change. In reality, sometimes we're just not in environments that bring out our best qualities and our best selves. And that's been a really powerful reframing that I've learned. Like I remember I said to my mom, I said, oh, this, like one of my colleagues keeps explaining the same technical concept to me, and I just don't get it. Like, I just think my brain's broken. I'm not that smart. And she was like, maybe he's not that great at explaining it. And I was like,
good point. Literally.
I just would never put it down to that. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. And then actually feeds into a video that I watched today, which is basically about, she's a YouTuber, and she was talking about the fact that people have very similar topics, and it's actually okay because the way that one person describes something, you may not resonate with the way that they kind of communicate or explain a topic, but you may communicate with that same topic the way someone else explains it.
Yeah.
And so that was actually really helpful for me to like even link back to this now and say, okay, just because one person explains a quite complex topic to you and you don't understand it, maybe it's just the way that they've explained it. And yeah, sometimes you need to go to a few sources that may explain that same thing, and then you'll be able to understand. Because in school, we actually are encouraged to apply new learning again and again and again. And I think sometimes in the adult, yeah, as an adult in the workplace, we almost put a burden on ourselves that if someone teaches me something, I need to learn it straight away and understand that straight away and being able to apply that. But that's actually just not realistic, because in school, someone wouldn't say, oh, here's our lesson on King Henry VIII. Here's information, be able to pass an exam.
Like, the next day.
The next day. Because you need time to, you actually need to, and I feel like that's probably what you can say as a university student as well.
Like, definitely. I feel like it's quite a simple concept. Like, we all know that, like, all our brains work differently, but then it's still really easy to overlook it.
Yeah.
Like, you almost just forget, like, oh, just because I don't, like, look at something the same way as someone else, that doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just a different way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, it goes, I mean, that's part of the reason I've got lots of feelings on the school system not being quite set up for how we need it to be, because it is just one way of learning.
Yeah.
And yes, some people will get help and be able to be kind of taken away from the main class and taught in a slightly different way. But on the whole, we're all going through the same thing. And you're like, but actually, this doesn't suit all of us to learn this way. And to your point, I guess, to that guy that wasn't explaining it in a way that was resonating with you, we could probably all remember having a teacher that made you either love or hate a subject.
Oh.
So you could go from hating it to loving it because it was a different teacher, or vice versa. And you're like, but it's the same subject, but it's the way they bring it to life. So again, personal preference and the way people present things.
It's actually very high risk, the whole teacher thing, though, isn't it? Like, I remember even when I was doing my A-levels, one of them was economics. And my first year, I remember I got a D, and then they changed teachers. And I did AS and A-level in 1 year, just because I wanted to retake it. And I ended up I ended up averaging out to get a B in the end.
Amazing.
And that's like just the power of having really supportive teachers and a good environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes such a difference.
I had a really amazing psychology teacher. I'd never, ever been taught the way that she taught me. She'd basically made the curriculum into almost like a puzzle. And like, if you learn all the pieces, when you got to the exam, you could piece it together and make the essay that they wanted. Like, when she was teaching it to me, I was like, okay, this is interesting. And then I learned it. I did the exam, my grades. I was like, oh, she's a genius. Like, it's amazing.
That's actually, but yeah, it's a shame, but it's like a good thing when you're winning.
And yeah,
like,
yeah, literally.
When you have the good teacher.
I think when you come across someone like that, you're like, wow, we need more people like you. It's not just, they don't just know their subject. They know how to teach their subject in a way that you can apply it to do well.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like you do need, ideally you'd have, especially at the beginning of your career, you have people like that to support you as well. But I always say about mentorship, right? Because this is almost like a form of mentorship in the workplace when you're like giving people new knowledge and like helping them to upskill, that your mentor doesn't have to just be from your company. So like I've probably also because of the pandemic, people. Because I used to reach out to people all the time because I was like, what are you doing? You're at home. And so, and so I always had different mentors for different things. So I'd have someone that I'd go for technical things. Someone I would go to for maybe like softer, well, I call them core skills or how to navigate the workplace and all that. But I always would highly recommend people to have like a few mentors in the workplace to help them navigate the internal, how that works there, but also externally as well. They can give you a different perspective and help you with skills that can keep you relevant in that current job landscape. So there's always cases where you're at work and you're not using the latest and greatest technologies. Like not all software engineers at different companies will be using AI system models just because of the way the company is set up. Or they may not be familiar with the latest technologies that have just come out that people are using to create set features and new implementations of technical things. So I would always highly recommend that. Always get multiple different mentors if you can.
Definitely. And so how did you get the guts to quit your job and go, this community, this is going to be able to pay me and put food on the table and do what I needed to do?
Yeah, because it was generating enough revenue for me to be able to do that for starters. So I was like, okay, I need to make sure that this is revenue generating and whatnot. But I loved it. Like most importantly, I loved it. And I was like, do you know what? I'm in my 20s. We're taking a risk. Like I don't have... But I did think it took a lot of mindset work because for ages, like I would even say things like, if I'm not a software engineer, then what am I? Or like, if I'm not a software engineer anymore, people won't care about me. So I actually started with having to work a lot on my mindset in terms of like how I felt about myself, my identity. And even though, again, we're referencing the pandemic once again, but I remember even seeing loads of posts when people lost their jobs at Google saying that they had an identity crisis because their personality came from I'm someone that works at Google. And I remember being aware of that and still internalizing that feeling of, if I'm a software engineer, like this is how, like when I went out and people would ask me, what do you do? I loved the question. Because I was like, I love telling people I'm a software engineer. I love building new projects. I loved my teammates. I love the company. But I was like, this is time. Like I just love doing this so much. And it got to a point where I probably would have had to pick one or the other because it wasn't sustainable to do both. And I was like, you know, I love building this community so much. If it doesn't work in the next 6 months, I can always just go back to get another job, for instance. But it took a lot of work mentally, financially. Like, obviously, I've got savings. So I was like, I'm fine. But you'd think, oh my gosh, what if I quit my job and then no one wants to come to an event anymore or all these things. But
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate to have loads of founders around me as well who've told me like, Dore, like you've done this well, or like you have savings that you can lean in on whenever times get hard or anything like that. So
definitely. But I guess you also probably left with lots of ideas of like, I could do this if I had more time. And you probably had found yourself going, oh, I can't do that because I'm going to overbook myself. I can't do it. Whereas actually suddenly you give yourself the gift of time to go, I can do even more for this community and then grow it to be bigger. And maybe, I mean, do you have staff as yet or is that down the line?
Down the line. I've always wanted to be a solopreneur, as they say. Like just like, I just want it as lean as possible, but I really benefit from having freelancers that help me with various different things, whether that's strategy or other things like that. So that's been really helpful. But it's nice to have partners that actually see the vision as well, and they're really supportive in terms of everything. So
and it gives you the headspace to also be able to go, do you know, I don't have to do everything. I can give certain jobs to people that are specialist in those things, just like if they needed a software engineer, that's what you're specialist in as well. But also specialist in community building. I guess you probably had never thought that you might build a community at some
point. Literally never. I was like, if you told me, not even maybe 3 years ago, I'd be like, me. I'm like, no, that's drama I don't need.
I love it. I love it though. But it must be so rewarding. There must be loads of little stories of people that have gone on to do interesting things. But I bet there's stories you know, but there's also probably stories you don't know of amazing things that have come from people coming to your events. And
yeah, like someone was saying about how like she landed a new role because one of the speakers was talking about being audacious, and that made her like land a new role in a company that she would never have applied to beforehand. Like so many people are talking about just how much they've been able to advocate for themselves because they have the confidence now to be able to do that. And some people didn't even know to do things like, I always say to have a brag document, which is, it helps with your imposter syndrome, but most importantly, it helps you with positioning. So whenever you're doing anything at work, just to document what you're doing, what you've learned, and the feedback. So when you're going to your manager and you're trying to position yourself for a promotion, you have the evidence there already. And also to learn the process of how to get that promotion and being absolutely clear with your manager, like, this is what I'm working towards. Because some people, I think they think that, because different companies work different ways. So some companies, it's guaranteed that if you're there for a set period of time, no matter what you've done, you're going to get a promotion because it's just how it works there.
Yeah.
But in some cases, that's actually not the case. It's not a tenure thing. It's actually based on a value add. So what value have you added to the company to justify these things? But yeah, and it's been really powerful to connect with other women and just to give them those kind of resources.
I love that as a brag document.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. We have like a, I've lost the name of it, like a folder where you put all your good stuff in.
Love
like
that.
Of a screenshot, like if someone sent you a nice message or a nice email, and you can put that in there as like a little validation place, but not actually thinking of it that way of actually what else can I be bragging about, that there are things that I've worked on that I should be really proud of that maybe someone hasn't said something about, but that gives me my oomph to go and say something next. And yeah, because you forget, don't you? You wait 6 months and you sit down for a review with someone and they're like, what have you done? You're like, I don't remember. Like, yeah, and you suddenly feel a bit,
I don't know. Like, as someone who's like about to graduate, we like the people in my position, we like very much use LinkedIn for that. Like, we always post like what we've been up to, what we've learned, and then like personally it's so great to be able to reflect. Like, I think because I did an internship and then I went straight back to uni, and like I've only been back 3 weeks, which is crazy, but you just go on to the next thing and you just kind of, sometimes you don't even take time to reflect of what you've achieved. And like, I'll look through my LinkedIn and I'm like, I haven't even graduated yet, and like, wow, I'm actually really happy with all of this.
Yeah, and I think it's so nice to even celebrate yourself as well, to be like, okay, I go back to this document, or I even go back to my LinkedIn page to see that I've actually been doing things. Because there are days when you think, oh my goodness,
I've done nothing
today.
Yeah.
Who am I? Like, I'm the worst. And then you realize that, okay, like, success isn't linear. You're not going to feel good every day. And that, like, the progress that you've made is already just so powerful within itself. And I love that. I just love that as a quote. And you know, I love LinkedIn as well. So
Yeah, I'm a LinkedIn warrior.
Isn't it? It's good as well, because let's be honest, when you're going for roles, people are going to be like, okay, who is this person? They will Google you.
Yeah.
And LinkedIn is basically like a public CV in terms of, okay, what have you been up to? And you can actually just, it's a great way for you to stand out as an applicant as well, because you see, okay, you probably will have a bias towards someone who looks like they're taking a lot of action.
Yeah. Yeah. I prefer LinkedIn as well, especially like, because obviously on your CV, you can write like, oh, I did this, I did that. But on LinkedIn, I can attach a video I've made. I can attach a graphic. I can get like, you know, the people that in the business that I worked at to comment and, you know, say their take on it. Like, it's just kind of like all in one place.
Yeah, it's more living, isn't it? Whereas on a CV, I mean, anyone can write anything on a CV, can't they?
Yeah.
There's nothing behind it. But actually, yeah, the comments is a good point as well, because it's like, not only has Alice said this was great, but look, 20 people wrote some things on there.
Look at all the thumbs up you got.
Yeah. I love it. But then also it's hard, isn't it? Because sometimes, and the algorithm is cruel, and the algorithm's weird at the moment. I don't know if either of you have noticed this. Like, it's so weird. So you can put a brilliant thing out and no one blooming sees it. And you're like, I don't really understand what happened with that. But yeah, I'm seeing loads of content like 2 or 3 weeks after it's posted, which is so odd at the moment.
It's hard, especially for people like me who run events and do it on LinkedIn. And so I rely on email marketing for that, but that's half a conversation. But I do think that sometimes you'd be surprised at how many people see your post but aren't interacting.
That's the thing. Impressions, it will be like 1,000, and I'm like, where's all these people come from?
Yeah. And then you'll go to events, people are like, oh my gosh, I've seen everything that you're doing. And it's like, oh really, that's funny, because I've never seen you interact with anything
I get the exact same, that it is interesting, isn't it? Like, they're really following, but they're not,
they don't
showing
always
you.
Interact
they're lurking.
Lurkers.
I guess it's good to remember, even if they're not interacting, they are still there and they are still reading it and taking it in.
People are having they get value from your posts.
Because
it can be so like easy to hang up on like, oh my god, it's only got 4 likes, and get the ick with yourself, like, because that's definitely happened to me before. I think I got like 16 likes and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is giving me the ick, like, no one cares, I'm a loser and everyone can see it. But like, it's just not about that. And I feel like when you're not paying too much attention to the vanity metrics, you're actually paying more attention to, oh, okay, what do I actually want from LinkedIn? Like, what is this driving for me? And it's like, for me, I'm not that focused on getting the most likes and impressions. I'm focused on how can I build credibility so that when I'm working with people, they can see what I'm doing and they can look at my CV, do you see? LinkedIn and see, okay, this is the Amber that's doing stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Versus like, because what are these 100 likes going to do for me?
Exactly.
You know?
Are Duolingo, Nike and McDonald's some of your favorite brands? For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
What do you think, like for a young person, so Alice, you're already like massively on LinkedIn, but if we've got people listening that are like, what is LinkedIn? I've heard it's for business people. Like, is that where you think people should be building their personal brands?
Yeah.
Or yeah, and what journey have you been on with that?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so LinkedIn is like one of the scariest platforms to put yourself out there. I'm not sure why. I think everyone just gets major cringe about LinkedIn because it has a bad reputation for just being a bit corporate, a bit stuffy, a bit robotic. But LinkedIn is what you make it, especially if you follow the copywriters. They are having the time of their lives on LinkedIn. Like different algorithms, right? So that I feel like, especially young people who haven't been on the platform, can feel pressured to be just very sharp, very polished, very, you know, corporate. But it's actually whatever you make it out to be. And so I think that LinkedIn is a great place to build that credibility. No one's going to be stalking, well, maybe because I don't have Facebook, that I wouldn't be stalking at Facebook. But the first point of contact, like, especially if you want to, say if I was wanting to land a new role, I'd probably talk about all the ways I was upskilling and then reaching out to recruiters via DM on LinkedIn. Because the first thing they're going to do when they see your message is what? They're going to look at your profile and see what you're doing.
Yeah.
So it's great for positioning in that way in terms of, okay, what aligned opportunities am I looking to attract from LinkedIn? But also it's a great way to connect with other people in your industry or even meet people from universities. I met loads of people at my university from LinkedIn. Just like, okay, you're on LinkedIn. How can I connect to this person and build up a relationship from there? But I think it just depends on what do you want out of LinkedIn. But I think I would highly recommend it in terms of building up your personal brand and credibility to really stand out in terms of getting a new job or landing any opportunity that you really want. Like even me in 2023, I did over 40 speaking engagements, which is absolutely unhinged. I know, because I was working full time and doing that.
Yeah, it's nearly one a week.
Yeah,
and were you writing talks for that, or were some of them panels? Because obviously,
yeah, some of them were panels too.
Because that is easier, isn't it? In the like, it's hard on the day, but at least there's not like I've got to write this whole deck and make it look beautiful. And
some of them were repeat talks, which so is like, I've already done the talks as well.
Yeah,
but I don't think I could have landed that kind of opportunity if I hadn't been posting on LinkedIn, because people wouldn't have reached out to me unless they knew that I was doing that.
Yeah,
and so I feel like sometimes when we're doom scrolling on LinkedIn, we think, why are these opportunities not landing on my lap? And it's because, well, one, you're not doing the work, but secondly, you're not positioning yourself in a way that people would think of you as your first person when it came to, oh, okay, oh, I see a job as software engineer, I'm going to think of Amber for this, or I see the speaking gig come up at the tech conference, let me get Amber on the scene, you know?
Love that. Do you have any kind of methodology that you try and run by of like, these are my pillars that I talk about on LinkedIn, or like, would you recommend for students that they're thinking about having posts around what they're studying, what they, I don't know, their extracurricular activity that they're doing around a job and something they're passionate about, or do you think it's more natural than that?
I think it's an experiment. So I definitely did not have pillars when I was first starting out. I think I was just showcasing more of what I was doing to learn how to code. But I think that if I was to look at a framework that I would use in terms of if I was to start again, to start on LinkedIn, I would firstly like clarify like what value I'm looking to add there and understanding my why behind LinkedIn. So is it because I want a new role? Is it because I want to land more speaking gigs? Is it because like I want a promotion at work? I want more visibility? That's the first thing I would do. And secondly, I would optimize my profile so that when people are searching for me, that's the thing that they would find. It was absolutely clear what I stand for. So I'd look at things like my LinkedIn banner, my headshot, my LinkedIn headline, my featured posts, because that makes a massive difference. So showcasing, okay, what are the key things I want people to see? Is it my website? Is it a recent project that I've worked on? Like you can do links, you can do articles, like whatever you need. And then, because I do think that, and this will be interesting to hear your opinion on this, because I feel like with LinkedIn, it's different to somewhere like Instagram. Because if I found you on Instagram, I would really be consuming your content. But on LinkedIn, I don't think anyone does that.
No.
Like, how often do you go on LinkedIn and you actually read through people's old posts?
No, yeah. Yeah, it's much more like the grid on Instagram. You're like, yeah, I want to see lots of stuff. Whereas LinkedIn is more what the algorithm serves you, or if you're specifically going to nose at somebody for a particular reason.
Yeah, like, and it's so much text, but like, there's a lot of text based on LinkedIn. So like, even if you are like really looking at someone, you're not really reading through. It's just, and I was thinking about this, like, isn't that just so weird that, because I was thinking about my own LinkedIn strategy, and I was thinking to myself, I post so much on LinkedIn, but no one is stalking me on the same one LinkedIn as they would on Instagram. So that's why I'm all about profile optimization. It's like, okay, what are the key things that someone really needs to see?
Yeah.
Based on my profile. And then from LinkedIn, you develop a network, right? And that's about nurturing relationships. So not just sliding into, I heard a story about the student sliding to a recruiter's DM saying, yo, Can you give me some advice to get this job? And I was just like, I'm unhinged, but that is a whole new level.
That is crazy.
Let's have some decorum, please.
Yes. Yeah.
Let's have some decorum. Yo. Yeah. Just, yo has got to go. Yeah. Definitely no over-familiarity in the DMs, but it's all about, how do you build effective relationships and give value in the process? So it could be like, okay, I'm going to sign into this recruiter's DMs, but it's because I'm showing them an article on a new stat on the fact that it's harder for young people to get jobs, for example, or I'm not sure, or based on their previous posts or what they've interacted with, what you think of them, but also like to engage with them beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah. It also tries to, I suppose you can take away the, because I think people really worry about posting on LinkedIn. They're like, oh, but actually probably a day or two after it's gone, or maybe the 2-3 week period, if it's going to pop up again, it is kind of gone. It's not like your grid where it needs to be aesthetic and beautiful. Like, if not many people engage, don't worry, do the next post. If loads of people engage, think about what was really great about it. And I guess learn from the one that, like, there might have been a reason for it, but there also might not be a reason. It just, the algorithm is a bit, it's really hard to pin down at the moment as to what's working.
I have no idea what's going on. Even someone said on my LinkedIn post today, she was like, love the fact that you're doing this. Sorry, my LinkedIn algorithm is messed up. Because like, it was literally a post I did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've had it. A couple of my team members have got really good at posting recently, but I'm seeing all of their posts like 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm popping up with like a little thumbs up, and I feel like a bit of a like out of date granny. I'm like, this happened 2 weeks ago and I'm sorry, I'm just appearing now saying well done, liked it, or put in a comment. But it's like the algorithm's not showing me, and I can't go and check all your profiles every day to see if you do post something. Because that's also a bit weird. But yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
It's really weird. But I think everyone understands now, so they kind of know that you're not probably stalking them in the way that, you know, back in the day on Instagram.
If you've seen someone been on your profile.
Like, but it's also like a case of, if you like something that someone posted like 6 months ago, you're finished. Like, yeah. Because you've been caught like a rat here.
Yeah.
But like on LinkedIn, it's so normal. And I think even now for Instagram, it's blurred, because remember back in the day with Instagram, things would come out in chronological order.
Mm.
And now it doesn't. You're seeing reels that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, there's just not that same... Unless it's someone that's like quite personal. Like,
yeah.
If I have like 6 posts on Instagram and you're liking the first one, I know that didn't come up on your algorithm. There's no way.
Yeah, it is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we do get hung up on numbers and data, and actually it's better to just get out there and put stuff out there.
Yeah, depending on your goals.
Yeah.
Like, if your goal is to be a LinkedIn influencer, the vanity metrics matter.
Yes, you know? Very true.
But if that's not your goal and you want something else, then yeah, the vanity metrics aren't something to focus on. It's just an ego boost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say as well, also as a young person, I feel like LinkedIn's a bit intimidating, because I'm like, oh, I'm not actually like fully out in the world of work yet. So like, do I have the right to be posting on it? But like, you can almost treat it like a portfolio. So like, exactly. It doesn't have to be like, you know, about a job. It can be, oh, I took part in this volunteering on the weekend. It's just kind of about you and your person as a whole, not just strictly like professionally.
Definitely, I'd agree. What's next for the community?
Ooh, what's next? Well, actually, I'm going to be launching an online free hub in January 2026.
Very exciting. So, not long now.
So keep your eyes peeled. Yeah. You'll be able to join and connect with the other women.
Love that. That's really exciting.
So exciting.
Yeah. I think it'll be really, really powerful. Because I think that the main thing is, it's so London-based right now. And so people outside London are saying, we want to connect with the community as well. And it's like, girl, tour, there's going to be a whole hub for you.
Love that. Would you end up doing events out of London, do you think?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. I think Manchester's next.
Yeah. Nice. Ooh, there's exciting. Such a like scene in Manchester at
yeah,
the moment.
Yeah, there is.
There is. And there's a massive tech scene in Manchester as well. So they've been saying you need to come up, but I am, I promise. I said it last summer, but I'm coming in 2026.
You've heard it here. We've got it on camera now. Yeah, like,
no,
Manchester.
No.
She Bites Back is coming.
I'm about to ask you to edit that one out. Yeah.
So, Alice, any final questions that we want to get out of Amber?
I have one final question. And that is, so out of all of like the webinars and the talks that you've done, which one has stood out to you the most and why?
Oh my gosh, it was definitely my talk at FF Conf called, I think it was called like Imposter Syndrome Overworking and something else. I have no idea what it's called. But I just remember I felt so good on stage. I loved the topic. I don't know. I just love that talk in particular.
Yeah. It just hit.
It just hit. Like every time I feel like, oh my gosh, my talks are like not even that good. Everyone knows this stuff. I'll go back to that talk and I'm like, yes, this is actually research backed. She knows what she's doing. I would add a lot more to that talk now, but I just look, there's something special about that talk for me. And it's in one of my favourite places of all time, Brighton. I call it the Bali of the UK.
Love that. Love that.
I love Brighton. I'm not even a summer Brighton person. In fact, I don't even like to go to Brighton in summer. Like, give me an autumn. Give me a winter. Give me a spring, people.
Oh, what venue were you in?
Oh, that's a good question. I have no idea.
Was it the Dome? Was it like the...
It was in the cinema. Duke York.
Oh, something, yeah.
I've been back to Brighton, but not
the venue.
Not to the venue. But I honestly, I remember, and that actually was the catalyst to me starting the community as well. Because I met loads of community organisers at that conference.
Love that.
I felt like I got an epiphany.
Wow.
Love I was like, maybe that should be a
that
thing.
That was your sign.
That was a sign. Yeah. And the re-sign was the webinars. And I was like, you can't make it up.
Love that. Oh, that's brilliant. I love Brighton as well. We're off to Brighton SEO this week. So my world, SEO, there's a big conference that happens twice a year. So at the Brighton Centre, which would be exciting. So,
yes.
And I'm on stage and I'm going to be bringing that energy.
Bring it, Becky. Yeah. You got this.
Absolutely. I love it. I'd be on stage every day of the week. I don't know about you. Like
you're probably extra flat,
though. I feed off of it.
I love it. I actually love
it. It's good fun. It's so much fun. So is there anything we've not asked you or things that you're thinking, oh, the next generation need to hear this and I haven't said it?
Next generation, please don't lose your critical thinking skills.
Yes. Yes, the point.
That's what I've got to say.
Do you know what? It's interesting though, because I think young people are worrying about that. I was at an event the other week and I did a talk about how AI is changing search. And there was a young lad who's just finishing his university degree, so probably similar age to you, Alice. And he put his hand up to ask a question at the end and was asking around, but do you not think AI is going to kind of be really bad for the next generation? In that it's great that you might be, I'm coming up to my 40s now, so you know how to think about all these things that you used to have to do yourself. But my generation can just ask AI, and isn't it going to ruin us? And I was like, well, I guess that's down to the places that you work and your approach to things, because you need to not let it. But I suppose, I don't know, it's all right at the moment while they can still see that what we all used to have to manually do that AI might do. But roll forward 10 years, 20 years, as we start to forget, I don't know, it's quite scary, isn't it?
I'm sure there's probably a Black Mirror episode that relates to that, or they're going to do one on that. You know, it's really challenging, and it depends, because we all have lazy days, but if those lazy days are every day where you just want to outsource your thinking, then that is an issue. And I'm loving anti-brain rot content at the moment. So it's just basically like what I did instead of doom scrolling, and they'll be linking to articles that they've read, they'll be linking to long form videos that talk about complex issues, maybe like philosophy videos and things like that. Like, that's what we should be leaning more into, like anti-brain rot.
Love that.
Like, doing our best to take more time off of our phones and off of doom scrolling and trying to consume something that's actually meaningful, or just listen to an album.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's just making a conscious effort to not be reliant on it. Yeah. Like if you feel like you are, shut the laptop and go connect with nature or something.
But it's hard because it's an addiction.
Yeah.
And I don't think that us as a society are taking the scrolling as an addiction as seriously as we should.
Yeah.
Because it's an issue.
And I guess, but I suppose it's down to us to try and take responsibility for it and to try and stop it. Because I do think it's one of those things that will just, it's almost like it, just a habit gets worse and worse over time. It's like, oh, I'll just do a bit more and I've done a bit more, to the point that if we don't remember and we're not teaching the next generation, that we're just going to all end up just robots. So let's not be robots. Let's keep the critical thinking.
Keep the critical thinking. Do a digital detox once in a while.
Nice.
Talk to your friends in person.
Yeah.
person.
Yeah.
Have go a no phones rule. Go to events in person. Have a no phones rule.
Yeah, that's really nice.
I like that.
Where can people find you online?
Oh, find me on LinkedIn. I'm there all the time. Yeah. Amber Shand. Yeah.
Love it. And to find the community?
She Bites Back. Well, that's such a good question.
Yeah.
I'll link to how you can get email notifications. Follow us on LinkedIn, on Instagram.
Perfect.
That's where we are.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I love your story. It's so inspiring. It also shows that, because I guess you committed to something from a university point of view and thought that's where you were going. And that doesn't have to be the end. Like, you can then pivot and change. And I think people feel like there's so much pressure to know what they want. But actually, you can just go do something. And if it doesn't work out, pick something else.
And it's normalized now as well, which is also great. So you're not having to justify why you're changing the way that I probably would have had to. Because it's normal for people to change careers at that point. So,
and you would have learned so much in doing that, that albeit some of it would have been really specific to going into finance, but there'll be some real kind of critical things that run through it that will have shaped who you are now and how you think and the things that you've gone on to do. So none of it's wasted effort.
That's key. Yeah. None of it is wasted effort.
No. Oh, I love it. You've been fantastic. I am excited to watch your community continue to grow.
Thank you.
I would love to come up to one of the events at some point.
The events you're invited.
Do it. I love it. And Alice, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been brilliant.
Such a good time. I don't want to go.
I don't want to do it.
I want to stay.
Come back soon.
I will.
Because we love having you on here.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you on another episode of Behind the Future. That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.